Okay, let's go ahead and get started. It's 2 o'clock. My name is Kevin Scadron, and I'm here substituting for Professor Rice, who's traveling today. And since my research area is computer architecture, he thought that I could cover today's material for you all so that you can stay on track. I actually normally teach the operating systems course. This is a bit of a bigger room than I'm used to, so it might take me a little while to get calibrated. My voice has a tendency to trail off, so if you start having trouble hearing me in the back, just like wave your hands or something. And in general, please feel free to interrupt if you have any questions. So I think you've been covering caches, and you talked about direct mapped caches and started in on set associative caches. So just as a brief review, let's look at a 64 kilobyte direct mapped cache with a 32-bit virtual address. And just review how we would translate that into a cache lookup. So here's our cache, and here's the data portion, and here's the tag portion. And I left out how wide the blocks are. So let's say that we have 64-byte blocks. So how many bits do we need for the block offset? Who knows their powers of 2? Yes?
6,
right. So here's our virtual address. And which end of the address are we taking those 6 bits from? Low order or high order?
Low.
Right. So we'll do the low order bits over here. So here's our 6-bit block offset. Now next is going to be a set of bits that we use to select which row in the cache to look at, which set, except our sets are just, you know, one row per set because it's direct mapped. So those two terms are equivalent in this particular case of direct map caches. How many bits do we need for that? Anybody? So it's this number here that we care about. How many bits do we need? Well, how many rows do we have in the cache? Let's start with that. We've got 64-byte blocks, and the total cache is 64 kilobytes. So how many rows do we have? I think I hear people saying it. It's just 64 kilobytes divided by 64 bytes. So we have 1K rows, right? And how many bits is that? It's 10. So handy thing, 1K is 10 bits, 1 meg is 20 bits, 1 gig is 30 bits, and so on and so forth. All right, so this here is going to be 10 bits. So how many bits do we have left in our tag? Just 32 minus 16, right? So 16 bits for the tag. So we're going to take this here, and that's going to select a row, and we're going to read that out. It's going to actually come out into a little buffer here, and we're going to compare this tag value that we read out with, pardon my overlapping lines here, we're going to compare these tags. And if it's a hit, then we know that the data here that we pulled out that came from, let's say, this row here, we know that data is the valid data, and we just need to pick the correct byte or word that we want based on the offset. So the offset comes over here, and we have a mux, and we use those 6 bits to select the bytes that we want. And we know whether it's 1 byte, or 4 bytes, or 8 bytes, depending on what the instruction, the assembly language instruction tells us is the operand that we want, right? So there's byte level operations, 4 byte word level operations, and so on and so forth. Okay, so everybody comfortable with direct mapped? Any questions? So I think I'm just using Charles's slides here from here on out. I actually probably could have borrowed one of his slides from the previous day. Yes, question. Yes, direct map means one way.
Oh, so does associative mapping mean there's multiple ways?
So direct mapped is like a degenerative version of associative where there's only one row per way. So you could think of it as being one way. And now in this example, we're going to look at two ways. And you can draw it the way that Charles, Professor Rice has drawn it here. So where you think of having the set divided, having the cache divided into two physical chunks or banks, or ways, or if you actually have it in one physical monolithic hardware array, then your index will actually select not one row, but two rows for each index, and you'll look at both rows. So if it's a two-way associative, you have two rows per set. If it's four-way associative, you have four rows per set that are candidates to put your data. And the value of this, as you, I think, saw on Tuesday, is that with direct mapped caches, it's very easy to have conflicts where one piece of data that you're accessing kicks out the data that were already there. So for example, let's say you're doing some matrix A equals B plus C. If these are offset by the size of the cache or some multiple of the size of the cache, every time you access B of I, you're going to kick out, every time you access C of I, you're going to kick out B of I, and then that's going to kick out A of I. And so basically, every single access will be a miss because they keep kicking each other out. And so what set associativity does is give you more places to hold stuff that map to the same index in your cache. So index 0 now has, as you can see here, I've actually forgotten how to do a highlighter, but yes. So here's one way, one place you can store data, and here's another place that you can store data for the same index. So if B of I and C of I happen to map to the same index, then when you go to I plus 1, because remember, a cache line holds multiple words, you won't kick values out. So if you imagine that the thing over on the right isn't there, when you try to put B of I in here, you hope that you're also going to get hits for B of I plus 1, B of I plus 2, and so on, to exploit the spatial locality. But if you don't have this other way over here on the right, when you access C of I, it kicks out that whole row of B information. So then when you go back to look at B of I plus 1, it's a cache miss. But then you kick out the C information that you just loaded. So when you go to C of I plus 1, it's another cache miss. So what associativity does is reduce the number of conflicts. And so we talk about some terminology here. A set is basically an index with multiple places to hold stuff. So it's the set of rows in your cache that you access with a given index. So set zero is, in the case of a two-way associative cache, is two rows that you get to look at with index zero. And set one is two rows that you get to look at with index one. Sorry, did I say that wrong? So set zero is two rows that you get to look at with index zero. Set one is two physical rows in the cache that you get to look at with index one. If this were a four-way associative cache, there would be four rows in your cache that correspond to index zero, and four rows that correspond to index one. And so in the straightforward way of implementing this, the higher your associativity, the more rows that you have to read out at once. So there's a cost. There's a hardware cost of reading more information out of the cache. And those costs are that you have to have more wires. You have to compare multiple tags in parallel. This probably makes your hit time longer, because it just takes more time for all those signals to propagate. It also consumes more power. So there's lots of research in the architecture community on how to have your cake and eat it too and get something like high associativity with less hardware cost and less power cost that we won't go into today, but there's a lot of tricks that you can play here. But just terminology, these are the sets. And then we talk about the ways. So way zero is like the, if you have a group of, let's say, two rows per index, it would be the top one or the left one or the zeroth one for each of these, right? So if this were a larger cache with more rows, way zero would extend down here. There'd be one row for each of these indices in way zero. And then another row, another set of rows over here. So the sets, just to clarify, a set is all the rows that correspond to a given index. And when we talk about a given way, it's a group of rows that, I struggle with a good way to explain this, but it's a group of rows at a given position within each set. So one of the reasons you might show ways this way is that this is actually a common way to physically implement set associativity. You have two separate physical banks, groups of data cells, and all the zeroth entry rows in a given set are in one bank, and so on and so forth. And if you're curious, this is also a way that you can try to make set associativity a little bit more efficient, is that you can access only, you can play some pipelining tricks basically to not access all of the rows in a given set at the same time. So let's not dwell too much on that, because we want to look at how to actually look up data in a set associative cache. So In this example, we have a very small cache. It's just got two sets, like you see here. So this is like a toy example, obviously not a real cache. We only have two bytes, not even two words, just two bytes in a given block or a given cache row. And it's two-way set associative like shown here. And we assume that the whole address is only 8 bits wide. So we're going to have one index bit. We only need one bit to choose whether we're going to go with set 0 or set 1, right? And we only need one byte because we only have two bytes in our block. So at a given position, here's byte 0 and here's byte 1. We only need one bit to choose whether we're accessing byte 0 or byte 1. And that means that in our 8-bit address, here's our offset. This is just 1 bit. Here's our index, it's just 1 bit. And we have 6 bits of tag. Any questions so far? So let's look at an example. Let's say we have this address sequence that's down here at the bottom of the slide. So our first address is all zeros. So we're going to look at, first of all, the index bit, so that we know which set to look at. And arbitrarily, this gets into replacement policy, but so let me back up a sec. First of all, this is obviously going to miss because the cache starts out empty. So we need to find a place to put the data. So before we even get to that, let me just clear up a detail here. So we index into set 0, which is determined by our tag bit here. And we look at the tags. And the tags may or may not match, but we also have to look at the valid bits. Now, the valid bit that is being shown in this example is after we fill the data in. So it would have started as a 0, and it's going to transition to 1 after we fill in the data. But if the cache is empty, all the valid bits are 0, and it doesn't really matter where we look. So this is maybe an example that I'm spending too much time in. We're going to miss here. We're going to have to pick a place to put the data. The replacement policy, when we start out, let's say, tells us to fill in the left-hand side here. So we're going to set the valid bit to 1, like this. We're going to fill in this tag here. And then we're going to read the corresponding 2 bytes out of memory. So memory of 0x00 and the neighboring byte 0x01. And we'll fill them in here. And now we've handled the cache miss. We've brought the data into the cache. And then we take the corresponding byte, in this case, and pass it along to the instruction, the load instruction that was requesting this data. Okay, so let's move on to our next address here. Same index here. So same index here. This is a hit now, right? Because it's the same index, the same tag, all zeros. I kind of obscured that with my scribbles. So the tags match and the valid bid is one, so it's a hit. And the first request took this byte. The second request is going to take this byte. Everybody with me so far? So that's what this slide shows. It's just what I was describing. It's green now because it was a hit. So let's move on to our next word. This, we're now at the third address here. We're going to look at index one here. And just to avoid confusing things, let me just go back here for a minute. So this is the state of the cache when we do this third load. Index one, there's nothing there. In reality, there are actual bits here. And the tag match will happen comparing whatever's here with this sequence of bits. It might even match just by random luck, but the valid bit is zero, so it doesn't match. And we're doing the same thing in parallel in both places, right? Set associative means we look at both rows in this set simultaneously. I could also say we look at both ways. We look at the appropriate location in both ways and check them both simultaneously. Yes?
What's the gray column inside the packet size? What are those bits?
This column here?
Yeah.
That's your block offset. Lowest order bits are the block offset, which in this really trivial example, just to fit on the slide, is we only have 2 bytes in our block, so it's just 1 bit for our offset. So, just to elaborate, you saw with these 2 addresses here, 0 is taking this word, 1 is taking this word. I mean, byte. Okay, so we missed. So we're going to fill it in. So once we've brought the corresponding data from memory, we fill the data in here, and we put the corresponding tag in here, and we set the valid bit to 1. And the actual data go in the value, in the data portion of your cache. Okay, so let's, before we move on to the next slide, let's look at the next address. So, we're back to index 0. Let me just change colors here. So we're back here to index 0. But with a different tag. So we're going to compare the left and the right. Yes, question. I didn't think about this when I was looking at Professor Rice's slides. Give me just one sec. 1, 2, 3, 4. So I think he's just trying to represent that those are arbitrarily he chose values to go there.
But
yeah.
I'm just wondering because like.
Oh, I see what he's done here. Okay, so if you take this whole sequence of bits, the fact that they are different colors is what threw me off. So this is binary 0110001. So that address, this bit sequence. Corresponds to hex 63. And this here corresponds to hex 0x62. It's actually, that's just what that binary sequence corresponds to in hex. So this is the memory value at address 0, address 1, address 62, and address 63.
Yeah. No, I get that. I just, like, I don't understand how you choose the range. Like, how do you know, like, obviously we're looking at 63, but there's two bytes. So why do you pick 62, 63 versus putting 63, 64? Like, how do you know which one to start with?
So in a cache line, the one with the zero in the lowest order bit will be on the left. And the one with the one in the lowest order bit will be on the right. So, you know, if we drew a bunch of locations in memory, we're just going sequentially. And so when we go to 0x64, that won't be in this position here because it will move into the next cache line. Because this bit here would become one, and this bit here would become zero, and this bit here would become zero. So that would be a different cache line. And in fact, you see that scenario is going to come up in a few steps. So the fact that I befuddled myself here for a moment, I think means it bears elaboration that this whole sequence of bits is the memory address. Don't let the color coding and the dividing into block offset and index and tag distract you from the fact that this is one memory address. So you're going to go to that location in memory, and what you're actually going to bring into the cache is enough bytes to fill up that cache line. But what we're trying to actually access is a particular word or byte, whatever our assembly language instruction specifies. Up here in what I highlighted in yellow, that address all zeros means we go to address, we want the byte that's at address zero in memory. That's probably the best way to phrase it. And here, we want the byte that's at address 63 in memory. Now, when we access that, we'll bring along, when we service that cache miss, what comes along for the ride is byte number 62. Because we want to fill the whole cache line. If we're going to take the trouble to service a cache miss and go to memory, we want to fill the whole cache line. We don't want to leave a hole in the cache line. And that's why down here when we, down here when we get to this point, which we haven't yet, when we access the byte at address 62, we'll have a hit because we brought it in when we were filling the cache miss for 63. Any questions so far? All right, so let's move on. So 61 is a miss because we're at index 0, right? And that tag here, let me pick a different color, this tag won't be found in the zeroth set. We have this tag, which doesn't match, and before we did the fill, we had nothing over here, or some random bits, but a valid bit of zero. So this tag won't match because the valid bit is zero, and this tag won't match because it's a different tag. So that's why this is a miss. So then we'll fill it in, like we did here, And in addition to bringing in address 61, we'll bring in address 60. Because we want to fill the whole cache line. So now we're going to get to 62. So we're going to go back to index 1. And we're going to look for this tag. Let me clean up a little here. We're going to look for this tag here. 011000. Hey, it hits. And so we're able to get the word that was brought in previously and exploit spatial locality. Now, why is this spatial locality instead of temporal locality? Anybody? Right. So what would be an address that I could access that would be an example of temporal locality? Right? Because we brought in 63. It's sitting there in the cache. We happen to bring along 62. If we access 63 again, that's temporal locality. But when we access 62, it's spatial locality. And the extent to which you can exploit spatial locality is a function of your block size. So maybe this is a good time to go on an aside, which we'll come back to in a few minutes. There's a trade-off with your block size if you have a fixed cache capacity. So if your cache is limited to whatever, let's say 64 kilobytes for your L1 cache, and you want to make the blocks bigger to get more spatial locality, because you know that workloads are going to do a lot of walking through arrays. The bigger your blocks, the fewer rows that you have, the fewer sets that you have, the fewer places you have to put different chunks of data that aren't related to each other. So making your blocks wider will help you in one way, because you'll get more spatial locality, you'll get more hits. But it will potentially hurt you in another way, because you might have more conflicts because there are fewer places to put things.
Is all this stuff with the, how many ways it has, and how big each set is, that all built into the hardware, or is that a software thing that decides that?
So the question was, if I can paraphrase a little bit, is it determined by hardware or software how many ways and other parameters here that we're talking about? And that is actually baked into the hardware. Been a little bit of architecture research on making that more configurable, but in real world processors, it's baked into hardware. And maybe I should go on an aside here. Let me just insert a slide. I don't remember if Professor Rice has talked about cache hierarchies. But in fact, modern processors, you have multiple cores. And inside them, you have a small L1 cache, a bigger level 2 cache, and then a giant shared level 3 cache. And there's even research on a level 4 cache. So typical sizes for L1 are 32 to 64 kilobytes. That's pretty small. And the reason is you want that to be very fast. You want the hit latency to be a couple cycles at most. And just because of the time it takes for electrical signals to propagate through a chunk of bit cells, you can't really make it any larger than about 64K and have it respond fast enough. Level 2, I actually haven't looked recently, but I think it's on the order of 256 to 512 kilobytes. So still pretty small. And the latencies are relatively small. I don't remember offhand what the latest are, but so this is like 1 to 2 cycles. This is like 6 to 10 cycles. I think closer to the lower end. Level 3 is going to be on the order of 8 to 32 megabytes, and this is going to be like 20 plus cycles. And these days they all have 64 byte blocks. So you can hold 16 ints or 8 double ints, double words, double precision, floating point values, etc. So for each of these cache accesses, the low order 6 bits will be your block offset, but the size of the index and the size of the tag will be different for accessing each of these caches. And actually, when you miss in the first level cache, then you go to look in the level 2 cache. If you miss in the level 2 cache, you go look in the level 3 cache. If you miss in the level 3 cache, that's when you finally go to memory. Now, I'm talking about high performance processors like you have in all your laptops here. And even probably in today's cell phones, you have a 3-level cache. A low order embedded device for some kind of IoT sensor embedded system will not have this kind of deep cache hierarchy with large caches. The really low end microcontrollers will just have a 1-level small cache. And then the associativities here tend to increase as you go further out. The associativity, remember, is costly in terms of time because you have to do more comparisons. You have to move more bits. And so it's easier to put high associativity in the caches that are farther away where you care a little bit less about the latency. Okay, so enough of this digression. We had our hit here for 62 because it was already there because we were exploiting spatial locality. Now we go back to this address. This is actually an example of temporal locality, right? It was already here. And finally we go to 64. So what's going to happen here? Well, we're going to look at set 0, and obviously it's not there, right? This tag, let me try the highlighter. This tag here does not match either of the ones that's currently there. So that's a miss. But what do? Right? Because we have to bring in the data for 64, for address 64, but the only way we can do that is to kick something out. So we need to replace one of these two blocks in set 0. So we have to pick one of them to kick out, and I think you already, let's see, actually, have you guys covered replacement policy yet? LRU, stuff like that? Right, so if we're doing LRU, which one of these is the LRU way for set 0? It would be this one that's LRU, right? Because we accessed this way here more recently than that other one. So that's where we would fill in address 64. And so just to remind you what's happening at more of a circuit level, when here we have a slightly different cache setup, you still have the 1-bit block offset, but now you have 8 sets, which you can see in the number of rows that's up here, but also just from looking at how many bits are marked off for being part of the index. And whatever set you index, you're going to read out the tags, and they're going to come down here into a comparator, and you're going to compare the tag bits from your address, and if they match and the valid bit is 1, then you have a hit. And you're going to do these two comparisons in parallel in a typical associative cache setup. And then you're going to look at your OR gate here. Is one or the other true? If so, you have a hit. And the one that matched is where you'll pull the data from. And so logically, you send both sets of data into this MUX, and your block offset controls this MUX that tells you which byte or bytes you pull out. There's some ways that you can optimize this part. It might not be literally these two MUXes set up the way that's shown here, but conceptually that's the easiest way to draw it. And just to clarify, this MUX is choosing which way, right? Because you can see that the control signal here is coming from this first AND gate. So if that's true, it will pick the first way. If this AND is false, it will pick the second way. And then from the way that's chosen, then you choose the bytes with this MUX here that's controlled by your offset. Everybody following along? Any questions? Okay. I forgot, this was actually mapped out step by step here in these slides. So you can see here that exactly the sequence that I was describing. You do the comparison, you do an AND with the valid bit, that controls that MUX that chooses the way. And if that is a match and the valid bit was true, then this is a 1 that's moving along this wire here. So we'll pick the data here that are then giving you the byte that you want here. So just to review, with an associative lookup, there are several possibilities. One option is that none of the blocks in that set are valid. Another is that there are valid blocks. So when I say none of them are valid, I literally mean the valid bits are 0. Another option is that one or more of those valid bits is 1, but the tags do not match. Something else is stored there. And a third option is that one of the blocks actually matches the tag and is valid. What cannot happen is that both ways match. A tag will match in at most one place. Now, where a given tag ends up when you do a cache miss and fill it in is a function of the replacement policy. So let's go back here to this example. Let's look at this miss here on address 64. So we're looking at set 0, index 0, and this tag here does not match either of the tags up there. So where do we put it? It's associative. There's no canonical way to say it goes in the left-hand way or the right-hand way. It's a function of your LRU policy. So what happens in this particular address sequence that the right-hand way is the LRU way, and so that's where we're going to put block 64. But if we had a different sequence of addresses, it could be that the stuff over on the left here is what got replaced instead. So there's, with associativity, within a given set, which way you fill into on a miss is only a function of the replacement policy. And that replacement policy, I think you covered, could be least recently used, which is a little hard to implement in hardware for anything more than a small number of ways. So you might use some approximation like not recently used or purely random actually works kind of okay. Although there's been a lot of research in recent years on how to spend a little more hardware to get better cache replacement, because there is actually some, you know, it was a small effect, but it's gotten to be more important over time. So many trees have been killed, or many, these days, not many people print out research papers. Many bits have been spent writing papers on how to refine the replacement policy and get something as close as possible to LRU without the hardware cost of LRU. Okay, so we're going to move on to a new topic now, which is what to do on writes, because so far we've only focused on loads, reads. So before I get into writes, any questions? Yes? That's right. So the question, my answer will imply what the question was. So to implement any replacement policy, we have to have some bits for every set, for every index, telling us whatever information we need to implement that replacement policy. So if we're doing LRU, we need the LRU bit or bits for every single set to tell us which way is the LRU way. And the thing about LRU is you need to know what the order is. So it's trivial when you only have two ways. It's either left or right. But what if you have four ways? The LRU way might be way number zero, but what's next? Is it one or two or three? So you need multiple bits to implement true LRU, because you need the whole ordering. Okay, so what do you do on a store? So with loads, you typically, when you miss, bring the data into the cache. You actually don't have to. Most architectures, most instruction sets have a mode where you can bypass the cache. If you know you're only going to touch the data once, and there's no spatial locality, and there's no benefit to caching, you can avoid kicking useful stuff out of the cache by using these special instructions that bypass the cache. And I just put that there as a side note. But this becomes a little more interesting with writes, because often when you write data, you know you're not going to look at it again for a while. It's like, okay, I'm writing this, I'm done with it. It's going out to disk for posterity. So we have a couple of choices to make. If we miss in the cache, do we allocate a line and write the data into the cache line that we just allocated? So this case, it's called write allocate. If we allocate a line, it's just like a read miss. We use LRU, we decide where to put the data, we kick out whatever was there before, and we put the new data there. Now, if we're writing, let's say here's our cache line, and there's room for 4 bytes, or whatever our unit of writing is. And let's say we're writing this item. We have to actually fill in these other spots from memory. So just like with a load, we have to go to memory, we have to bring in the data so that we can fill this stuff in with the corresponding values from this chunk of data that make up this cache block. Because otherwise, if we have a subsequent load, let's say, to this address, we would just have another cache miss. But in fact, to make things even worse, because we only have one tag and one valid bit, we don't even have a way to know in the bits that are stored there in the cache whether or not the data are filled in. So we have to guarantee when we allocate a new line to handle a write miss that we fill in the rest of the data with the corresponding values from memory. Because otherwise, this load could come along, and if we didn't fill in that data, it would get whatever garbage bits are sitting there. Because if the tag match and the valid bit is set, we're gonna think that that whole cache line is valid. We don't have any bits there to tell us anything different. So that's one decision point. Do we allocate a cache line or not? If we do, we have to fill in the words there. Side note, there was some research on if you could guarantee that you were going to write all of the values in a cache line in a rapid sequence without ever reading from them, then you didn't actually need to go to memory because you knew you were going to write everything all at once. This was never implemented because with multi-core, with multi-processing, some other thread on a different processor or different core might want to read what's there. And the compiler didn't have any way to know what a different thread might be doing. So that's why you either allocate and fill, or you don't allocate at all. Now, if you do not allocate the cache line on the write miss, you just write that value straight to memory. Now, if the value's in the cache, either because you had a hit or because you allocated the line and filled it in, when do you send that new data out to the next level of your cache hierarchy, or maybe all the way out to memory? So you have two choices, what's called write through, which is you immediately propagate the data out, or what's called write back, where you only write it when the cache line is evicted. So so just to elaborate on basically what I've been talking about for a while, in a typical cache, which is many bytes long, like 64 bytes, the processor is never going to write the whole cache line, so you always have this problem that you're only writing a piece of the cache line, you need to fill in the rest. And so on write allocate, you need to fetch the rest of the cache block. The other choice is about write through versus write back. So suppose that the CPU writes value 10 to this address 0xabcd. So here's the current value that's in the cache, and you see the same values reflected in memory. So here in this example, we've updated the value in cache, and if we do write through at the same time, we also send that value out to memory. This generates a lot of extra bus traffic. It's almost never implemented anymore because it's very costly. It creates a lot of contention for memory. that can slow down later memory accesses, and it also wastes a lot of power. Every bit you send anywhere costs power, costs battery life. So the other option is that you just write it in the cache and you remember that it's dirty. This is a technical term. When you write data in the cache that haven't yet been propagated out, to avoid losing that data permanently, you have to have a way to remember that, so you label that as dirty. Another term that's sometimes used is modified, but for some reason, the technical term dirty has caught on. And it's just an extra bit on a given row in the cache. Every row has this one extra bit, in addition to the valid bit, to remember whether the data there are dirty or not. And if the data are dirty, when you eventually replace this cache block, because you had a miss and your replacement policy says this is the cache block that's getting evicted, you have to actually write the dirty data out to memory so that it's not lost. If the data are not dirty, then you can just drop the bits on the floor and you don't have to go to memory. Because if the data are not dirty, those are just bits that you previously read from memory. So to go back to this example, at this point in time, before the write happens, the value in cache is the same as the value in memory. And if we were evicting this instead of actually overwriting the value there, we could just throw these bits away because the correct value is here. But we are overwriting that value, and that's why we need to remember it's dirty and eventually write it out. In this example, we first wrote the 10 to this line in the cache. Now later we read from a different address that conflicts and wants to evict this cache block. So we have to do the write to bring this value out here before we can read the new data to fill the cache line to service the load. I'm probably stating the obvious, but this has to happen before this. Because you need a place to hold this data and then send it out before you can bring data back in and put something new there. So we're going to augment the picture that we've been using. In addition to valid, tag, and data, we're going to have a dirty bit associated with each row. And when we write a value, Professor Rice's convention is that a dirty value, he's going to mark with a star. So write back and write allocate work together. If we write, let's say, the value 0xff into address 0x04, 0x04 corresponds to the bit sequence like that. And in this example, we had our two-way set associative cache with just a single bit of block offset. So it only holds 2 bytes. So here's our block offset, and then here's our index, and here's our tag. So we're going to look in index 0, and we're going to look for this tag, which, if we bring the bits together, is 00001, and that doesn't exist there yet. So our LRU is going to tell us that we're going to evict what's highlighted here in red. And we're going to need to write back what was there because it was dirty. And the new thing that we write here will also be dirty. So here's our new tag and our new value. And notice here that when we wrote 0xff, we also had to fill in the remaining byte of this cache line by reading from memory so that the cache line is filled out. And it's dirty because we wrote some new value here. And we update the LRU information. So because this is the way that we just touched, the LRU bit flips. So now this here becomes the LRU way. So the LRU is updated on reads and on writes, on loads and on stores. Any questions so far? Okay. Now, write no allocate means that if we miss, we're not going to allocate a cache line. We're just going to write it directly to memory. But the cache can still be write back. So in this particular case, when it's the same value and address, we're going to miss, the tags don't match. We'll just write this value to memory. But if we were to update a value in the cache, and so there's some dirty stuff like you see over here on the right, and later a load causes an eviction, we have dirty data. We got to write that back to memory. So let's just go through this example here very briefly. So suppose we write one byte to 0x33 and then so on. So writing one byte to 0x33, if you convert this to bits, it's 0011, 0011. So it's set one, byte offset one, right? So that is going to mean that the tag here is 001100, which is this actually looks like it might be a mistake in the example. Because we've got two matching tags. But I think what Professor Rice was trying to get at here is that if it's a miss, you just wouldn't even, because this is okay, so this is write allocate and write back. When I was reviewing these slides, I didn't catch this. But the data are here, so that should be a hit. So moving on to the next one, reading one byte from 0x52, we're in set one, offset zero, and that's going to not match the tag. And so we have to evict away. We're gonna have to evict this. And because it's dirty, we have to actually write it back before we can read the value that we want and put it in the cache. So that's what this shows, and you see the LRU way changing. Now if we read one byte from 0x50, that's set zero, offset zero, and the tag does not match. You can work out the bits for yourselves, but these data are not dirty so the replacement doesn't do an eviction. So we can just drop those bits that were there on the floor and read what we need. Question? When you say the first example, which address?
The 0x33. So when we access 0x33, because we have a hit on the weight with index 1, shouldn't the LRU switch to index 0? And then when we read from 0x52, shouldn't we do the 1?
So when we access 33 here, the LRU indeed switches to 0. And then so 0x52. Yeah, I think you're right. Because this access is a hit. So the 0x33 is a hit here. So the LRU way changes here. Good catch. So I didn't actually catch that mistake when I was reading through these slides, so thanks for catching that. So we covered this. A couple of other points here. The way that I've shown you so far has writes being kind of a bottleneck, because we have to wait for the write to go all the way out to memory before we can read in the data that we want. And memory accesses are slow, like 100, 200 or more clock cycles. So somebody had the idea that you can put a little buffer next to the cache called a write buffer. And when you are writing data out, whether it's actually write allocate or no write allocate, you can put the data in the write buffer. And the write buffer is a small, fast data structure that has an access latency similar to an L1 cache, so that you and just stick the data that you're writing out there and then immediately read the data that you want from memory into the cache. And then propagate the data out to memory later when it's convenient behind the scenes. So the data are not lost, they're in the write buffer. And you can do the write when there's no other traffic trying to access the memory. And that 100 or 200 cycles isn't on your critical path in the way of doing the cache fill to read the data from memory that you're trying to access. Now, that means that the write's not taking up time. There's a catch here. What if this program now wants to read from the data, from the addresses that are sitting in the write buffer before they get put in memory? So when you have a write buffer, you need to actually look not only in the cache, but you need to check if the data you want are in the write buffer. So let's talk about, so that's just a side note. Write buffers actually are a pretty interesting topic. They have some nice benefits, but they add a lot of complexity, especially with multi-core. And we won't go there, I'll just mention that. So there's a few conceptual terms that it's important to know when you're talking about cache misses. We talk about the four C's. It was originally the three C's before we had multi-core, but they refer to different types of cache misses, and they give you a framework for thinking about what's going on. Compulsory or cold misses are what happen when you access a cache line for the very first time. there's basically no way to avoid this kind of cache miss. You never saw that address before. You never saw an address referring to that cache block before, so it's not in the cache. Can't be. There's a way around this. You can do something called prefetching. The compiler can analyze the code, or the hardware can analyze the access pattern and say, wait, I think I'm going to be touching this address in the future. Let me bring it in preemptively. So like if you're streaming through an array, there's actually hardware in all your laptops that will recognize that streaming pattern and prefetch the data to try to avoid these compulsory misses. But we still call them compulsory misses because in the absence of this optimization of prefetching, it would be a miss. Conflict misses are what happen when you don't have enough places to put all the data that you're touching. And an example of a conflict miss is when you have a direct mapped cache and you're accessing two arrays in parallel that are exactly offset from each other. And they're going to ping pong in a particular way in your direct mapped cache. When you go to two-way associative or four-way associative, you avoid those conflict misses. And the fact that increasing the associativity avoids that particular example of a miss tells you that it's a conflict miss. And so the way you know that it's a conflict miss is you look at what the misses would be if you had a fully associative cache. So a fully associative cache is when you have one set and all the rows are in that set and you check all the tags in parallel. That is the theoretical optimum for minimizing, for eliminating conflict misses. If it's a miss with a fully associative cache, it is not a conflict miss by definition. So that would leave us, it's either a compulsory miss, and if you saw that address before, then you know it's not a compulsory miss, then that must mean your cache is just not big enough. So capacity misses are misses that you can't eliminate by dealing with compulsory misses, and you can't eliminate with full associativity. It just means your cache isn't big enough. And the way you tell if it's a capacity miss is you make your cache fully associative. Obviously, you're doing this in a simulator. And now you increase the cache size, and you look at what the miss pattern is. And the misses that go away as you increase your cache size with a fully associative cache are capacity misses that you're getting rid of. And then there's a final category that we won't really talk about, which is coherence misses. So when you have multiple cores that are running in parallel that are trying to access the same addresses, and in particular when they're trying to write the same addresses, you can only be writing from one core or the other. So if core number 2 is writing an address that's currently held in cache number 1, it has to invalidate the data in cache 1 so that it can write it and hold it over here in cache number 2. And that is a function of the access pattern between different threads on different cores, and we call those coherence misses. So if you want to make any cache look bad, you can still come up with access patterns that will be sort of pathologically, optimally pathologically bad, right? So let's say you have an address sequence that fills the cache, and then let's say you're walking through an array, and the array is one item larger than the number of entries you have in your cache. So you walk through the array, you're filling up your cache. Those are all misses, they're compulsory misses. And here's your array. You're walking through your array and you're filling up your cache. And now this one, you've just filled up your cache. This one will now replace something that you just wrote. And actually, I should draw it the other way around. So here's your cache with a bunch of rows. And you know, here's your array, and you're walking through your array. So you fill this up, and the next item that you touch in your array here at the end, where's that going to, it's going to wrap around and fill in this row. And now, what's going to happen if you your array is longer and you keep going, you'll keep replacing items. Or another way to make it behave badly is after you filled in this item here, go back and touch that first item in your array. And then go back and touch this item. And then go back and touch this item. And what you'll get is a ping pong effect here where they keep kicking each other out. But real programs rarely behave this way. They have locality. So I think we're out of time. I didn't quite cover everything Professor Rice wanted me to cover, but I'll just leave you with this slide. You can think about different ways to improve a cache and which of those C's they affect and how they either improve your miss rate or your hit time or your miss penalty. So for example, a larger cache will reduce capacity misses, so it'll lower your miss rate, but it'll make your hits longer because you have a bigger electrical structure to access. So thanks everyone, I hope this lecture was helpful, and Professor Rice will be back on Tuesday.